Page 416, Pasuk Aleph. Last time we started this parsha, we said, "Ve'elam mishpatim shatosim lefnehem." These are the laws that you should put before the Jews. And last week we discussed this whole concept of mishpatim, why mishpatim follow matan Torah. We got into that whole concept, but to add a little bit more to it and explain what the commentaries explain on this pasuk. The Gemara says, and Rashi quoted this before, that the laws of dinim, the laws of litigation, was given to the Jews already before the Torah was given. In the city of Marib, right after the Jewish people crossed the Yamsuf, crossed the sea, when the sea split, and the Jews crossed the sea, it says over there they came to a city of Marib. It says over there, Sham Sam Lechaikum Mishpat Vesham Nisol, that there are many laws of the Torah which are given to the Jews in the city of Marib. And explains that this is even before Matan Torah. Why? Because in order, the Medrash explains, in order for God to be able to give the Torah to the Jewish people, there needs to be peace amongst Jews. You can't have fighting Jews. Like we know, when the Jews finally came to Midbar Sinai, they camped singular. Vayichan, they camped singular, text, because they camped as one person. When people have fights, they're obviously not friends. But once you go to litigation, and both people accept the ruling of the court, of the Bet Din, so then hopefully people will become peaceful with one another. So Hashem already, before the Torah was given, Hashem already gave him the laws of litigation, hoping that that itself will cause friendship and unity amongst the Jewish people. And the Pasuk says, Ela mishpatim asher tosim lifneihem. What do you mean you should place before them? So Rashi says, I would think, Rashi quotes in the Medrash, I would think that Moshe Rabbeinu would think, okay, you tell the laws once or twice and that's it. The Torah says no. You have to put it before them like a set table. In fact, that's where we all know the code of Jewish law is called Shulchan Aruch. Why is the code of Jewish law called Shulchan Aruch? Shulchan Aruch literally means a set table. When you have a set table, everything is ready to go. You're ready, you just eat. Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem, Asher Tosim Lifnehem, you have to put it in front of the Jews in a way that the Jews have it clear. And that's why Gemara is very unclear, the outcome of the Gemara, what is the halacha? Because the Gemara has a lot of discussion, question and answer. You don't know necessarily from the Gemara, from the Talmud, what the halachic ruling is. Shulchan Aruch is called the code of Jewish law, it's called the set table, because over there it's very clear. This is what you're allowed to do, this is what you're not allowed to do, this is what you have to do. So that's what the Pasuk says, Shatosim Lefneim, you have to put it in front of the Jews. Another important law, and there's a zillion details to this law, but basically, Rashi also quotes in the Gemara, that Ashatosim Lefneim, when two Jews have litigation, they have to go to a rabbinic court. They're not allowed to go to a secular court, even if the secular court makes the same ruling as the Jewish court would, a Jew with another Jew must go to litigation in front of a Bet Din. That is the rule. Even today. That's the halacha. And in fact, there's a lot of sharp expressions in the Gemara, and the Gemara says, it's considered like stealing, it's considered like adultery, it's considered like worshipping idols. It's very sharp expressions in the Talmud about taking one Jew to another Jew, for one Jew to take another Jew to court. The only time it's permitted for a Jew to take another Jew to court is if the court, if the rabbinic court allows you to go to the secular court to take a Jew to court. For to give you an example, Reuven summoned Shimon to come to court. So Beis Din sends him what's called hazmana, summons. What happens, the guy doesn't listen to the summons. Beis Din sends him a second one. Sends him a second one, he still doesn't come. So Beis Din sends a third hazmana, third summons. If the guy still doesn't come, so Beis Din officially, they don't do it in many places today, but officially Beis Din gives out what's called a shtar siruv. They give out a public statement to the city that this person refused to come to din, You're not allowed to call him up to the Torah. You're not allowed to count him to a minion. You're not allowed to do business with him. Very sharp things in the olden times, and the courts had power. That's what they would do. And then the rabbinic court would allow you, if you wanted, to go to secular court. Or if the halach is, if another Jew calls you first to secular court, then you could respond back in secular court, and then you can sue them. That means if somebody sues you in court first, once you're allowed to defend yourself in court, you can even sue the other guy in court.
What about a small claim court? You cannot take even a small claim.
Technically, not according to halacha. Yeah. And there's a zillion details. I mean, there's a whole section in Shulchan Aruch just discussing this concept of, taking a Jew to civil court. In fact, the Balaturim has a lot of interesting numeric acronyms for these psukim. If you want to just follow in the word Ve'ela Mishpatim Eshetosim Lefnehem, the Balaturim is famous for his acronyms and numerical values and things like that. So he says Ve'ela is an acronym for V'chayiv Adam, a person is obligated, Lachker Hadin, to seek out the judgment. Meaning you have to seek it out and make sure you're giving a proper judgment. Hamishpatim is acronym for Hadayin, meaning the judge. Mitzuvah is commanded. Sheyase pshara, that you should try to make a compromise. Terem yase mishpat, before he actually does litigation. According to halacha, when two litigants come to rabbinic court, the rabbinic court likes to make peace. Mm-hmm. That's the purpose of Torah, is to make peace. Now, most of the time when you make a compromise, both sides are happy. You make litigation, one side's right, one side's wrong, one guy's happy, one guy's angry. When you make a compromise, basically everybody's happy. So the halacha was that when two litigants come to court, they ask him, listen, do you want us to make a settlement between you? Or do you want strict law? Now, if both parties agree to do settlement, so then the court goes to do settlement first. And that's why the acronym is Hadayin Mitzuvah. The judge is commanded Shiyase Pshara, to make a compromise, Terem Yase Mishpat, before he actually does the actual litigation. And then he says, Asher Im Shnehem Reitzim, if they both want. And Tosim is the acronym for Tishma Shnehem Yachad Medabrim. You have to listen to both of them speak together. According to Halacha, and this is all derived from Psukim and Chumash, but he brings it out in acronyms of these words. In Torah law, a judge, or three judges, is not allowed to listen to one side before the other side is present. And if he does, he's automatically disqualified from sitting on the case. The Halacha is, they both have to be present in the room. When one guy says his side of the story, you need to hear the other guy's side of the story. Both have to hear it, that they know exactly what's happening and what to answer and what to reply and so on. Once a judge listens to one side without another side, they automatically formulate a picture in their mind, because they heard one side. So it's not going to be a proper, honest judgment, because you're already picturing it one-sided. So the halacha is, you need to have both listening, and there's a whole procedure in a Beis Din that people have to make sure that they do it. Yeah.
You can take women to Beis Din also?
As a
business.
Yeah, you mean if you have an argument with a wife, with a woman?
Right.
Yeah.
But you say if they don't come to the court, they cannot, they say don't give him Ali or don't allow them to come to the shul.
You mean how does a woman get punished?
Right.
Don't let her bake chocolate cake, don't let her. No, they basically, you can't do business with her. Obviously, don't count her for a minion, you're not supposed to anyway. I mean,
I know, but it's the punishment they are signed for.
It's people. Also, but it's more of a spiritual thing. They actually sometimes can put a person to chedim, into excommunication. Okay. Which is not only a physical ban, it's soul-wise, it's a spiritual ban. You know, Bezin was a very serious institution in Torah law. Okay, now there's another interesting thing. In fact, the Balaturm also says, if you look at the last letter of Ve'ela Ve'hei, Hamishpatim is a mem, Asher is a resh, and Tosim is a mem, which is mirma, mean trickery. And there's a lot of difference between Jewish courts, by the way, and secular law, not only in testimony, who's accepted as a witness, and everything together. But for instance, in secular law, if the judge knows a guy's wrong, but the other guy has a better attorney, okay, as we know in a lot of famous profile cases in LA, everybody knew the guy was guilty, including the guy himself knew he was guilty. But he happened to have a good lawyer that got him off the hook, right? So the din is, in secular law, the concept is, listen, you know, I might know you're guilty, but bottom line is, you couldn't prove it or whatever it is, so you go by that. In Torah law, there's what's called din meruma, a crooked law. Meaning, if the judge knows the guys are just playing games, and the guy's guilty or innocent, and he owes him money or doesn't owe him money, Bezin doesn't go by what, first of all, there's no lawyers in Torah law, but the court's not going to go by what the guy had a better attorney. If Bezin knows the guy's guilty, then the din is you have to proclaim him guilty.
But to prove someone guilty in Jewish law is harder than Goy law.
For capital punishment. But not in monetary issues. In capital punishment, of course, you know, Bezin rarely killed a guy. And you have to have two kosher witnesses, you know, relatives were not kosher witnesses. Women were not kosher witnesses. David Melech Yisrael, Jewish king, was not a kosher witness. If Moshe and Aaron, we learned, Moshe and Aaron, very great guys, never would lie. If Moshe and Aaron would come to Bezdin and say, we saw Reuven kill Shimon. Okay, Bezdin can't do anything about it.
In civil law, they could.
In civil law, sure, witnesses, they have witnesses, relatives.
Witness.
Yeah.
Because
well, the Rambam says, according to Torah, there's laws how secular law has to work. The Rambam writes, what type of witnesses and testimony is acceptable in a non-Jewish court is different than a Jewish court. For Goyim, what Torah says. But let's keep to the Jewish system. In the Jewish system of court, there's another interesting thing. In the civil system, you have a jury. Okay, besides the fact, in Torah law, there's no such thing as a jury. Okay? But a jury is 12 people. So you can have a hung jury if you have 6 and 6. Correct? In Torah law, besides the fact that there's no jury, in Torah law, you can never have an even number of judges. Never. Not in monetary laws, not in capital punishment. Now, that's why a bezin was either 3. You could have 5, 7, 9, 11. To give capital punishment, you needed a bezdin of 23. Wow. That was the minimal. The Supreme Court was 71. The real big, like we have in Lahavdal, Supreme Court in America is 9 judges. The Supreme Court in Torah, they sat in the Beis HaMikdash, there were 71 people. Because we learn it now, because Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God, gather 70 elders, and Moshe Rabbeinu was the 71st, there can never be an even number of judges, because then you wouldn't be able to have always majority ruling. Now, in capital punishment, the law was that you needed a majority of 2. For instance, if you have 23 judges, minimal to give capital punishment, and 12 say guilty, and 11 say innocent, you cannot kill him by that majority.
He's innocent.
He's innocent. You need minimal majority of 2. So basically, you would need 12, I mean not 12 and 11. You would need 13 and 10.
Right.
To make, well, 6, right, but I'm saying minimal. You would need 13 guys and 10 guys, and then it would be like that. And another interesting law in Judaism, by the way, is, and this applies to any Bezdin, Lahavdil, in the secular courts, like for instance, Supreme Court, right? When they have a case and they make their decision based on majority, you know exactly which judge said what. Mm-hmm. Right? They write the ruling for the majority and the minority. You know everybody who said what. In Torah law, whether it's a Bezdin of 3, or 11, or 23, or 71, whatever. Once the Bezdin comes up with a ruling, it's halachically a unanimous decision. And it's forbidden for any of the judges to say who said what. That means a guy can't come over to the loser, a judge can't come over to the loser and say, I want you to know I really voted, you know, on your side, but I was outnumbered. It's biblically forbidden for a judge to do that. It becomes automatically a unanimous decision. It's no more 13 versus 10. It's 23 saying guilty. There's no appellate law in Torah law.
So 13.
Unless if you can prove that the Bezdin made a mistake. But that's not an appellate system. There's no appellate system.
So what's for the different courts then? 3 and 5? And
because certain courts, the Rambam says, like, capital punishment was 23. Certain times to add onto Yerushalayim, to add things, they needed 71. Or what happens if a Bezdin of 23 couldn't figure out the halacha? So what happens if they didn't know? They weren't great enough, so they went finally to the Supreme Court. That's why the Rambam says, the Rambam writes, for an extremely long historical Jewish period, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, as long as the big Bezdin, which was stopped midway through the Second Temple, they lost their power, but for those extended period of close to 1500 years, the din was, there was never arguments in halacha. Because any time there was a halacha dispute that they couldn't resolve, they went to the Supreme Bezdin of 71. They heard the halacha, they discussed it, they argued it, they came to the decision, and that was it. There was no arguments in halacha. Some people say yes, some people say no. Bottom line, if some people say yes, some people said no. They went to the Super Bezdin and they made a decision. So there was no machlekes amongst the Eden. What?
12 guilty and 11 innocent.
Correct. For that matter, well, you said it. For that matter, the Torah says another interesting law. If all 23 said guilty, he's innocent too.
What?
If all 23... Now we said, once it's 13 and 10, it becomes a unanimous decision. Fine. Right. But that means all 23 say guilty. But if that didn't happen, all 23 people said guilty, the din is he goes free. Because if nobody was able to find a merit for the guy, something's wrong. Because the Torah says, v'shavtu ha'eda v'hitzilo ha'eda. The Torah says the community should judge and the community should save. So the Gemara learns out, if you have a case in capital punishment that nobody was able to get a loophole somehow that not to kill him, there was something wrong over here. There's not corruption, but something went wrong. And that's why, once again, there was another interesting halach in capital punishment. In fact, it was today's mitzvah in the Rambam. Every judge had to say their opinion based on what they thought, not based on what another judge said. You now have to be, in arguments, you could be swayed. But you can't say, well, this guy's smarter than me. If he says guilty, I better say guilty too, because he probably knows what he's talking about. Even though in my mind, I would think he's innocent. That, you know, it's forbidden. It's a negative commandment of the Torah. The Torah says, you have to say what you want. And that's why there was an interesting halacha. When it came to capital punishment, and the Bezdin heard the case and argued the case, when it came to vote taking, they started from the lowest judge. They started from the lowest, and they went upward. And the last one to vote was the greatest judge. Why? For a very simple reason. If the greatest judge goes first, and he says his opinion, then the lesser judges, people not as great as him, are going to say to themselves, wow, this guy's greater than us, he's smarter, he knows better, so he probably knows what he's talking, so we're going to say what he says. Then you start your opinion. Then it's his opinion. But when you start from the lowest, the smarter guys don't care what the lower guys say. They're going to say what they want anyway. So therefore, the din is you started what's called an halacha min atzad, from the lowest, and you went up to the greatest. In monetary laws, it didn't matter. Another interesting point, I don't want to, I mean, you know, the laws of Bezdin, that's what you get yod and yodin for. You could sit there for years learning it. But just one more interesting difference. In Torah law, for capital punishment, circumstantial evidence is worthless. To give you an example that the Gemara says, if I see Reuven, two people, two witnesses, see Reuven chasing Shimon into a room, and Reuven's holding a knife, and they see him running into a room, that's all they see. Then they see Reuven running out of the room. And the witnesses go into the room, and they see Shimon stabbed to death with the knife that Reuven was holding in his heart, and Shimon is dead. Mm-hmm. That in halacha is called circumstantial evidence. The witnesses are not allowed to testify that they saw Reuven kill Shimon, because they didn't see him kill him. That's circumstantial evidence. Circumstantial evidence is worthless in halacha. In capital punishment. Civil law, I think they do. Sure. That case for sure would be. Well, the question of DNA would not hold up in halacha. But
so what, he'd be let go?
Yeah.
So what if he's dangerous?
If Bezdin saw a guy was dangerous, and they couldn't prove him dangerous, but they knew they had to keep him off the streets because he was dangerous, they would lock him up, not as a punishment, because in Torah law there is no jail term. There is no sentencing of jail in Torah law. But I'll give you an example. The Gemara says, what happens if you had a mentally retarded girl, and all the men were taking advantage of her, so they would lock up the girl for her protection. Not as a punishment, just lock her up that she, you know, that the... Oh, well, you can lock all the men? But if there was a guy that was dangerous in the streets, and they couldn't prove anything, but best to know the guy was dangerous, they would lock him up, not as a punishment. The Rebbe once explained why there is no jail term in Torah law as a punishment. In America, you have 5 years life, 10 years, whatever it is. In Torah law, there is no such thing. You either get killed, or you get whipped, or you get, that's it. I mean, or you pay the debt. Huh? Yeah, but there's no such thing as jail. You don't lock up somebody as a punishment. And the Rebbe explained why. Because the purpose of a human being, a person was created to be a constructive human being that accomplishes things in the world. When you lock up a person and you take away that ability to be a constructive human being, that concept doesn't exist in Torah. Either a guy did such a crime that Torah says capital punishment, meaning he deserves to die, so you kill him, because Torah, his actions don't allow him to continue living as a constructive human being, so you have to kill him, or you whip him, or you give him punishment. But the jail term, which is basically a person wasting his time, not being able to function like he would be outside of prison, is against the whole concept of creation of mankind. And therefore there is no jail term in Torah. What?
Let's take the example of Esav, example, who everybody knew, or I don't know if they're witnessed.
No.
His mom knew that he was dangerous and he was doing all what he was.
There's no judiciary system then. What do you mean? There's no Bezdin then?
Well, but it seems to me the same thing now. I mean, what you're saying is the same thing if there is or there
we're is. Talking about a time when Bezdin had authority. In Israel, when they're Bezdin around the country. Nowadays, a rabbinic court doesn't have punishment for the jurisdiction for capital punishment.
What you're saying is that there's no witnesses. You cannot lock the person, or you cannot stop them.
No, you can't kill.
So it's the same thing when there was no
court. No, 1 second. If there's no witnesses, but Bezdin knows a guy did it, that would lock him up to keep him off the street, that he shouldn't be dangerous. But it wasn't the punishment.
Because he's like a sociopath, or because what?
Because Bezdin felt it's dangerous to have this guy run, but it wasn't the punishment for the crime.
It's not capital punishment.
No, it wasn't. There is no jail term in Torah law.
So where do they lock him?
Why? Not. Where? They had rooms, they locked people up. And what's the...
It's like jail.
But I'm saying it's not jail term as a punishment for the crime. It's not the punishment for the crime. It protects society, but you can't have a punishment for the crime.
What?
Because it's... all the laws... the question was, that's why it was David HaMelech, not a kosher witness. All the laws of testimony are completely illogical. If two witnesses say one thing, and 100 witnesses say the opposite, who do you believe? Huh? Torah says no, 2 and 100 are the same. Once you have two witnesses, 2 and 1,000, 3 kameya. According to Halacha, if 2 people say you owe him money, and 100 people say you don't, they cancel each other out, there's no testimony. If 2 witnesses say Reuven killed Shimon, and 100 witnesses say Levi killed Shimon, okay? So what happens? Everybody's canceled out, there's no witnesses, everybody goes home. It's completely illogical. Not only that, we said last time, when we were discussing these laws, there's another interesting law. That if you have 100 witnesses, and 1 of the 100 is not kosher, all 100 are not kosher. Eidus shebatla miksasa, batla kula. Eidus, the part of the testimony, part of the witnesses are not kosher, all the witnesses, you can have 1,000 witnesses. 1 of the 1,000 guys that came to testify is related to another guy, all 1,000 is no good. And like we said, we explained this. That's why at a wedding, you go to a wedding, a chuppah, when you need 2 witnesses, when the chassan gives the kallah the ring, right? So what do? They designate the witnesses. And many times the rabbi will add, to the exclusion of all others. What is he basically doing? He's saying that nobody else in the room can testify but these 2. What's the problem? Under the chuppah, you have a father and a mother and a brother and a cousin and all the relatives. They're all disqualified witnesses. If they're testifying on the ring giving, so they're going to disqualify the whole thing. So by excluding everybody else from the ability to testify, you're designating only these 2 kosher witnesses to testify. That's it. Therefore, the Gemara says, what happens if, for instance, just a practical case, there's a public murder, Reuven killing Shimon, okay, and 10 people saw it. And 2 guys of the 10 are brothers. So what do? 1 guy stays home. He doesn't go. One brother doesn't go to court to testify. And the other 9 guys go to testify. And they kill him that way. But if the brothers, 2 brothers would go to court, it's going to disqualify all the witnesses. So they don't go. They just don't go to court to testify. Because if they testify, they're going to ruin it. So that's what?
What if the person admits to the crime?
In Torah law, there's no admission of crime.
Wow. Who made the law then?
There is there's an interesting halacha. It says, a person is not allowed to testify for himself or against himself. And the reason for that is, Adam Kadav Eitzel Atzmei, a person is related to himself. So if you're testifying on yourself, you're testifying as a relative. So therefore, according to Torah law, and this again is where secular law is completely different than Torah law. In monetary issues, what I'm saying now does not apply. In capital punishment, or not even capital punishment, in lashes. You know, if 2 witnesses testify, you ate pig, and you were warned, and you did it right in front of their face. You ate pig anyway, so they bring you to Bezdin, you get 39 lashes. If a guy comes to Bezdin on his own, and he says, you know, I want to do tshuva. Bezdin, I just want you to know, I just had a cheeseburger. So, Bezdin says, so? Whip me. Sorry, we can't whip you. We're not believed. You're not believed. If a guy comes to Bezdin, Reuven comes to Bezdin and says, guess what, Bezdin? I just killed Shimon. Go, look outside. Bezdin goes outside and sees Shimon's dead. Yeah? Nobody saw it except Reuven comes and testifies himself that he saw the murder. Bezdin says, go home, have a nice day. He's not allowed to testify. In monetary laws, it's the opposite. If I say, I owe you $1,000, even if there's 1,000 witnesses that say I don't, I still have to pay the money.
God loves money.
He's all over the money. In God we trust. Everybody's cash.
Who made these laws again? Hey,
God! Who made these laws?
God didn't tell Moshe if two people are there.
Yeah! Yeah, it's all in the Torah.
In Judaism there is no confession.
The guy is a criminal, is not arrested. If he doesn't pay $2, he's arrested.
What? No. Israeli law is based on British law. Like American law is based on British law. But they changed it as time went on. But Israeli civil law in Israel, not Torah law, but din. The Israeli Supreme Court is based on British law. It's not Torah law.
Okay, so in America, we go by Torah law or the law of the land? What takes precedence?
You tell me.
Jehovah just said you got to take the Jews to Bedin, no?
What means the law of the land? If the law of the land says you're not allowed to keep Shabbos, so you have to keep, not keep Shabbos.
So you mean you don't need to go to court? If you're called into court, you don't go to court?
Oh, one second. There are certain laws, there are certain rules. Okay, I'll give you an example.
The Torah says that you keep the law of the land.
Right. Dina de Malchus Adina. But that's when it doesn't, either in monetary issues or in issues that don't contradict Torah. To give you an example, if the communists come along and say, you're not allowed to keep Shabbat.
Right.
The law of the land is, you're not allowed to keep Shabbos. So obviously Torah law says you don't listen to them. Mm-hmm. Right? But if civil law says you're not allowed to go through a red light, trust me, nowhere in Chumash in Torah does it say you're not allowed to go through a red light. Correct? I'm not talking if it's dangerous. If it's dangerous, Torah says you're not allowed to do dangerous things. But what happens is 2 o'clock in the morning, no, there's traffic, 2 o'clock in the morning too. But what happens, you go on the street, there's no cars and nothing. Okay? Civil law says red light, you gotta stop. Correct? Torah law doesn't discuss it. So according to law, you have to stop. Paying taxes, you have to pay. Dina Malchus Adina, the law of the land.
Okay.
Cheating is forbidden.
Why is the law about the money is more strict than the law?
It's not the law of strictness. It's a very simple thing. The commentaries discuss, why is my admission of money stronger than witnesses? It's not that it's stronger than the strongest thing that exists in Torah is witnesses. But I'm allowed to obligate myself to give you a gift. If I say I owe you $1,000, even if 1,000 witnesses say I don't, but the fact is I obligated myself by saying I owe you $1,000, I obligated myself as a gift to give you $1,000. That witnesses can't undo.
You mean it's like a vow?
It's like a vow.
Oh, so you could, but if you
the Poskim discussed this, four reasons why. Why? But the bottom line of it is that a person's admission of money, for instance, if I come along to you and I say, I damaged your property, mm-hmm. and you say, no, you didn't, I'm obligated to pay. I mean, unless you tell me, no, you don't have to pay, I forgive the money. I'm saying...
So what's the difference between this and
the
crime?
A crime, a person makes himself a Russia by doing it. A person's not believed to make himself a Russia.
About money? But
no, not about money. Capital punishment. If a guy says, I ate pig, he's not believed to testify against himself that he did something wrong.
So it means you can never do something wrong in God's eyes.
You could. But the problem is don't get caught. The sin is not stealing, the sin is getting caught. Don't you know that?
Rabbi, we say Tachanun, we say Hashem, we say we've got all these transgressions, but it doesn't mean anything?
Between us and God, it does. We have to do tshuva, but courts can't punish you.
Between men.
Of course, it doesn't make sense. The Torah says it doesn't make sense. This is what God wants. A person is not believed to incriminate himself in court. Because he can't testify against yourself. You're related. Hello? You're related.
It should be under the laws of Chukim, not Mishpatim then. Because it doesn't make sense.
Without the laws of witnesses is not the Mishpatim.
Oh, it's not.
No.
So between God and him, what you're saying is between man and God, there's another justice, and between man and man.
Correct.
Okay. So me, what you're saying is that God will punish him sooner or later, if really he did it, but we cannot punish a person because it's, if we don't have witness, it's like putting the label on him as a rasha, but we have no proof.
You know what? If a person steals money and doesn't get caught, you don't think God makes reckonings that you're going to end up paying a roof leak and a this leak and a that leak? What do you think? You're going to get benefit out of the money. The courts can't obligate you because you weren't caught. Right? And there's another phenomenal concept over here. By the way, there's another phenomenal concept in the whole judiciary system, which is a very interesting thing. Certain times, for certain crimes, the courts kill you. Certain crimes, God kills you. Meaning you die, chorus, or misa b'day shemayim. For instance, eating on Yom Kippur, eating chametz on Pesach, the courts can't kill you. Okay? That chorus, God kills you. You die young officially. And there's an avedus that the court kills you. The din is that in a sin that the courts punish you, tshuva doesn't help. In a sin where God kills you, tshuva will help. And this is another phenomenal concept. Meaning, if somebody, let's say, eats chametz on Pesach, and therefore the punishment is God kills you, and a person does tshuva, God will not kill him. But in the court, if a guy, let's say, openly desecrated Shabbos and was warned right before by two witnesses, and he publicly desecrated Shabbos, and he did it, and he was caught, the courts are going to kill him. Even if the guy does tshuva, he comes crying, I'm sorry, tshuva doesn't help. So the commentators explain, what's the difference? It's a very simple difference. A judge can only go by what he sees. Ein l'dayan ela masha ein avrayis, the Gemara says. A judge can only go by what he sees. Mm-hmm. Through the testimony of witnesses, the judge saw that the guy committed the crime. Correct? Tshuva, repentance, is in the heart. A guy can be a great actor and cry, and cry real tears, you know, the real stuff. But the courts don't know if you really meant it and did tshuva or not. So what are the courts? The courts see that you killed or desecrated Shabbos. Whether you did tshuva or not, they don't know if you did tshuva or not. So they have to kill you. God, though, knows what's going inside us. God knows if you really did tshuva or not. If God knows you did tshuva, then God is going to forgive you for your aveda. But the courts can't see your tshuva. Tshuva is what you feel. You can't know what, Bezin can't know what you feel. How can the courts know what you feel? The courts can only know what you do.
So, makes sense. A guy that testifies on himself, how does he get a kapara?
He does tshuva between him and God. It has to be tshuva between him and God. And by the way, there's another interesting halacha along these same lines. A witness who saw a murder or capital punishment type of stuff cannot sit as a judge. The rule, ein aid, nasa dayan. Let's say a court member, member of the court was walking in the street and they witnessed the murder. Mm-hmm. They are not allowed to sit as a judge on the murder case. So the question is, what better judge than that?
The best
testimony is the judge himself, you know. The answer is, because a judge, like we said before, has to be unbiased. Mm-hmm. He has to be able to look at it completely parif. Innocent and guilty, equal. When a judge sees a murder, he cannot be biased. He's biased. He cannot be unbiased anymore.
But he can be a witness, no?
He could be a witness. But he can't sit as a judge. Why? Because he cannot be impartial anymore. And a judge, halachically, must be impartial to be able to be a judge. Where? In capital punishment. Not in monetary issues. What? What?
12 say guilty, 11 innocent in capital punishment. What's wrong with that?
Exer se kosef.
So it has to be true.
There's no reason. It's illogical.
So who wins?
Guy's innocent.
So how can the ones that feel that he's not innocent? Guilty, Rabbi Shuster, how can the ones that the 11 that feel that he's not guilty continue to believe to live with their lives thinking that somebody has gone off to be killed when they felt that this man's life should have been saved. How can they lean on and keep on going with the you know? I mean, there's kind of this personal feelings of humanity being murdered here, and you're convinced that this man is innocent. You got to have some kind of conviction when you know that 11 to 12 voted that he was innocent.
And you ask, can the 11 or the 12?
What do you say? He said 11 says he's not guilty, and 12 say he is guilty.
So he doesn't get killed?
He doesn't get killed.
Because you need a majority of two.
Because you what?
Need a majority of at least two.
Oh, okay. Two witnesses.
Two judges.
Two judges.
That's also exerts the cost.
Well, what's wrong with a judge after the court case saying to him, I was on your side, really, but I was out?
Because once the judgment is passed as a judgment by the court, it becomes a unanimous Torah judgment. So therefore, everybody agrees with the judgment. So you can't come along and say, I was on your side. Right after the judgment, it's not true anymore. Everybody's on the majority side. Once the decision is made, there is no minority anymore. Everybody agrees on the decision. The court agrees on the decision. There's no dissenting opinion. There's no, you know, writing for the majority, writing for the minority. That's it. This is the opinion of everybody.
Can a video today be witnessing?
No. Today, for sure not. Today, you know, you can make any video you want.
No,
today you can falsify a video. They're even questioning now holding it authentic in court. Because you can doctor a video in any way you want.
Actually, there was a movie.
With digital, you know what you could do with the digital cameras? You know what you could do? You could stick anybody everywhere else. It's unbelievable. You could do whatever you want. And it comes out perfect, you know?
Could a judge be undecided? Like, say, not yes, not no?
If a judge says that they don't know, they have to add more people. There can't be any I don't knows.
So he's out?
They need a, you know. Okay. But again, the laws of the judges, so. Chayshe Mishpat, basically, with all the laws of litigation, all that, it takes years and years and years and years and years to learn.
Puts the lawyers out of business.
There is no lawyer concept in Torah.
So how do we get so many Jewish lawyers?
Because they don't, they're not in Torah.
Because their mother wanted them to be a lawyer. The Yiddish mama, my son the lawyer, my son the doctor. Don't make it yourself like a lawyer. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos.
It's better not to be a lawyer?
I didn't say that. In the secular system, there's a concept called lawyers.
Would you suggest that?
But what about
I'm not...
No, but I'm saying...
You expect me to get sued in court? All the lawyers are going to sue me. What do you expect them to do?
What about Dayanim? Come on.
Huh?
What about being a Dayan?
A judge in Torah is a good thing. Okay. Then the Pasuk says as follows. We'll just type the next Pasuk because there's a lot to talk about that Pasuk too. Ki sikna evid ivri. Oh, just one more thing. One more thing you didn't say. The reason, the connection between the last Pasuk of the previous Parsha that says, don't go up on steps on the Mizbeach. You know, you needed a ramp. You're not allowed to go up steps on the Mizbeach. What's the connection between Eila Mishpatim and Shatasim Lefneim, between the laws of the judiciary system? It teaches us that the Bezdin sat in the Supreme Bezdin of 71, they sat in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Lishchas HaGozis, the office of the prime 71 Bezdin HaGadol was in the Beis HaMikdash. So the connection is because the Torah speaks about the Mizbeach, and then the Torah says set up a judiciary system. So it teaches us that the judges sat actually in the Mizbeach, next to the Mizbeach.
They were outside of
it. Yeah, well, it was in the Beis HaMikdash, but that room at Lishchas HaGozis had a din of chol, not of kedush. Otherwise, it wouldn't be allowed to sit. Okay, then the pasuk says as follows: Ki sikna eved ivri. If a person will buy a Jewish slave, Sheish shanim yaved, 6 years he should work. Uvashviyas in the 7th year, yaitzel achav shechinim, he goes out free. This is the din as follows. There's only 2 possibilities that a Jewish man could be sold as a slave. The possibility we're talking about over here, because later in Chumash there's another possibility. The possibility over here is speaking as follows. A Jewish man stole. He had no money to pay back what he stole. So Bezdin sold him as a slave. Bezdin sold him as a slave to get the money back, to pay back the one that he stole from. This is what's called Machruhu Bezdin. Bezdin sold him. Another scenario is, that the Torah talks about later, is when a guy is so broke, he has no money to live, he's allowed to sell himself as a slave, number one, to make some money, and to be able to be fed and supported by the master. Now, slavery of an Eved Ivri, when we get into it, we will learn that basically it's not a slave that you were able to sell on a slave market and whip him and ask him to do disgusting jobs. It was basically a guy that you hired to work for you for 6 years. And the Gemara says, you have to treat him better than you treat yourself. And therefore the Gemara uses the expression, whoever buys a slave really buys a master. Mm-hmm. Because they have to treat the slave better. Only there's few dinim that you're allowed to, you know, own the slave in certain laws that the Torah allows with the slaves that we'll learn. But the Pasuk says when you will acquire an Eved Ivri, meaning a Jewish Ivri, a Jewish person as a slave, Sheish Shanim Yaved, he works for 6 years. Vashana Shvi'is in the 7th year, Yaitel Achav Shechinam, he goes out free. Because he's only allowed to work maximum 6 years.
If he stole, let's say, $1,000, he can work it off in a month. Why does he just say
you're right. Maximum is 6 years. Because what happens, let's make it easy. What happens if a slave was sold for $600? A Jewish slave was sold for $600. Mm-hmm. So it's basically $100 a year. Okay? After 3 years, somebody from the family or himself gets a hold of $300. So according to Allah, he comes over to the master. He says, Baitchik, here's $300, I'm free. Mm-hmm. He goes free.
Yeah, but if he can't,
max is 6 years. What?
He can work it off $600 in 1 month.
No, but he doesn't because he's bought as a slave. Now, obviously, let's say he stole $100 and the guy is worth $500 as a slave. They're not going to sell them for $50, they'll sell them for, let's say, for $600. The rest of the money may go to the family, and the rest he pays off, you know, for the Geneva.
How about somebody else pays for him?
To buy him out? It's fine. If they want to.
Then becomes.
Sometimes they'll say, keep him longer. It depends. Today there's no slavery, the whole concept doesn't exist anymore.
Non-Jewish, you have the right to whip him?
No. Oh. But it's not the same as the respect and dignity. You have to respect, and we're going to learn later about the non-Jewish slaves. But it's free. Yeah. But it's also, you can't just whip him and beat him. I mean, if you knock out his tooth or an eye, he goes out free. Mm-hmm. If you knock out one of the primary organs of a Goyish slave, he also goes out free. So it's not like you read about, you know, slavery, that they were cruel to them and tortured them, and, you know. Well, even the Goyish slave didn't have that halachic. You weren't allowed to do that halachically to any person.
Rabbi, so the slave cannot be sold for 2 years or 3 years. It has to be...
Officially, he's sold for 6 years. But he could redeem himself within the 6 years.
How can he redeem himself?
If he gets money.
Now what if he doesn't get money?
Then he works for 6 years.
And he's worth $100,000 a year, and you only...
Huh?
So let's just say, he's worth $100,000 a year, and he only stole $100.
He's a broke executive.
So he's going to be sold, the value of those 6 years is $6,000. And he's going to pay $6,000 for $100?
But I told you, the money, they probably give him the extra money.
He can work for a couple of months and pay him off. And
yeah, if he pays himself off, he pays himself, he redeems himself.
If he wins the lottery, he still can't redeem himself.
Why not?
Because anything he has is a master's.
No, that's by a Goyish slave, not by a Jewish slave.
Oh.
Okay. Not by a Jewish slave. Jewish slave, what you own belongs to you.
So he can go free after 2 months?
If he pays himself out.
What about if he steals again to pay him out?
He steals from his master to pay him out. What happens? He steals from his own boss to pay
him out.
Anyway. At Chassidus, the Meshi Kesselman's Chassidus Club.